When I thought about this theme, promises, the more I thought about it, the more I thought that's pretty much my life, is making promises and keeping promises every day, every minute of every day. That's you make promises and you keep promises. For example, when I got married, I made a promise to my wife to tend to her and to love her every day. When we had our kids, I made the same promise, tend to them, love them every day. When I started my various careers, I made a promise to do the best job that I could every day. When I came of age, went from boyhood to manhood, after all the crazy years were behind me, I made a promise to my community to be a good citizen every day. And even during those crazy years, I made a promise to myself to be crazy every day. And every once in a while, I look at my life and making all those promises and keeping all those promises every day, and the thought goes through my mind, shit, this is hard. This is really hard. And if I dwell on it too long, I freeze up. My life just freezes. It'll freeze for a day, a week, years. And then I have to remind myself of that saying that goes, well, yes, life is a struggle, and the key is to enjoy the struggle. I think the Buddha or somebody like that said that. But ironically, I don't think about all those promises during times of crisis. When there's a crisis, I just go into automatic mode. The promises are a given. I just do what it takes to get it done. And our family had a big crisis about 22 years ago after the birth of our first daughter, our youngest daughter, Kelsey. And it was a tough birth. And my wife was weak afterwards and sore and really tired. Because after all, like Carol Burnett said, childbirth is like taking your bottom lip and pulling it over your head. So it's understandable for her to be in the condition that she was in. But instead of regaining her strength gradually like a normal process, she was just getting weaker every day. Weaker and weaker, and not sleeping, and still sore, and she was just struggling until finally it got so bad that one night, about a week after Kelsey was born, late at night we were laying in bed, and she just said, I can't take it anymore, and she had a grand mal seizure. And if you've never seen anybody have a seizure before, it's horrifying. It's really scary. Her body stiffened up. She turned over to the right side. She was shaking and quivering. And I immediately got on the phone and called 911. And the dispatcher calmly told me what to do to keep her safe while she was having her seizure. And soon the ambulance came, and I told them all about the circumstances. And before I knew it, they had her strapped to the gurney, put her in the ambulance, and she was whisked away. And then I called Patty's, my wife's best friend, and she came over immediately. And as soon as she came over, I just collapsed in her arms and just started sobbing. Before she came over, I'd done something I'd never done before up to that point. I prayed. I prayed to God that she would live, and I just prayed and prayed and prayed. And then she came over, I just sobbing. And so she stayed with the kids, and I rushed to the hospital. And to my utter relief, they said she was stable. She was fine. I couldn't go see her right away. But finally, when I was able to go see her, I wasn't expecting the effect that the shock on her brain had had. And it was even worse than I thought, because they said on the way to the hospital, she had two more seizures. And so her brain was just fried. And when I went to see her, I'm pretty sure she remembered who I was, but she did not remember that she just had a baby a week before. And even worse than that, she thought Richard Nixon was still the president. And it was Bill Clinton at the time, I think. So now I had in my life of keeping promises I had a wife recovering in the hospital. I had a 3-year-old daughter, and I had a 3-year-old newborn on my hands. And it didn't take me long to finally discover I needed help. I needed lots of help now. And it's in times like those that I wish I was part of a big traditional Hispanic family or African-American family where we're in times of crisis, people just show up at the door with armfuls of food and years of experience taking care of children, and they just know what to do. But I come from a Midwestern farming European immigrant family and culture. And in my culture, we're very sensitive about keeping our personal space. And it's risky to reach out and ask for help. I don't know what the risk is, but that's just what it feels like. It feels like I'm taking some sort of a risk. But like I said, I had a promise to keep. And I was in automatic mode, and I was just doing what it took to get things done. And my plan was, the first thing was to get some babysitters so that I could have time to go to the hospital to visit with my wife. And since our families lived outside of the area and nobody was showing up at the door with armfuls of food, we didn't really know the neighbors very well because that's a tradition in our culture, don't mix with the neighbors very much, I turned to the closest people that I knew to help out, which were my coworkers. Now, some of them were hardly even above the level of good acquaintances. I mean, they're just the coworkers. But I was desperate, and miraculously, everyone I asked volunteered to come over and help babysit for a few hours while I was able to go see my wife. Even people that didn't have any experience at all with children. Like Gary, who was an environmental engineer, probably the most quiet, unassuming, smartest man that I knew. And I asked him, and he said, "Well, Kirk, I've never taken care of children before." And I said, "Well, don't worry about it. It's just going to be for a couple hours. I'll tell you exactly what to do. Mostly it's just going to be playing with our 3-year-old. And in the evening, he came over, and he had this look of utter fear and trepidation on his face. But fortunately, our baby girl, Kelsey, was asleep. And Sonia, the 3-year-old, she went right on to her task of making friends with Gary and figuring out what they were going to do to play. And when I came back from the hospital, both girls were asleep, and Gary was exhausted. But he had a smile on his face. It came time I needed to get back to work. This is about a month later, and Patty was still recovering. And by that time, members of our family had made their own arrangements to be able to come and stay with us for longer periods of time so that I could go to work. And my mom was a big help, and my sister-in-law, Carolyn, was a huge help, too. Carolyn is a no-nonsense country girl from the Central Valley. And she came over with a dish full of the most delicious chicken I've ever tasted in my life. And she just rolled up her sleeves and she said, "Don't worry about anything. I'm going to take care of everything. Your job is to go to work and tend to your wife. That's it." And that's what I did. I said, "All right." And she just helped us out so much. As the weeks and the months went by, Patty finally started regaining her health back again. She looked back and just felt a tremendous sense of loss and guilt, too, but that she wasn't able to be with her newborn the first couple months when she was born. It was a good opportunity for me, though. My mothering instincts kind of came out, and I was doing a lot of mothering, nurturing with our baby, which was an interesting thing for me. And eventually she came back to normal. Our family went into a normal family rhythm, And I look back at that time, and yeah, it was just hard. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. It was just intensely hard. But I look back and I think to myself, you know, I kept my promise, and life is a struggle, and the key is to enjoy the struggle. But I discovered that you don't have to do that by yourself. So that's my story.